Hello and welcome to the Torah Simecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Aviva Orlean and today we will be studying the 11th chapter, Perek Yud Aleph of Shmuel Beis. This is a very difficult perek, one that when taken at face value can be grossly misunderstood. It is the account of David and Bathsheba where on the surface it appears as if David is guilty of very serious transgressions. Therefore, as a bit of a departure from the typical format today, it's necessary to first preface the learning of the content of this perek with a little bit of a hashkafic discussion and an analysis of Chazal on this topic. Due to the scope of this topic and the constraints of this format, we will obviously not be able to cover even a tiny fraction of it, and I honestly cannot do this topic justice. But I will, however, try to provide a brief outline, and bear in mind that it is an outline only, it is brief, and it is absolutely not an exhaustive outline. There is a lot more. Chazal tell us famously in Gemara Shabbos 56a, Kol ha'omer David chata eino elatoa. Anybody who says that David sinned is making a mistake. And that means to say that the Navi presents David as if he, from the storyline, it seems that he committed an adultery and it seems that he was guilty of murder. The concept here is that the infractions of our great people are at times made to look worse than they technically were because they are held to a higher standard. Other examples of this include Reuven, who the Torah tells us was immoral and had relations with his father's wife, when in fact, the infraction was not as severe, but he meddled in his father's personal affairs, which is why the Torah presents it as if he was guilty of something more serious because of the level that Reuven was on. Similarly, the sons of Eli, the Navi tells us that they had inappropriate relationships with the women, and they took advantage of the women in the Mishkan, when in fact their fault laid in delaying the women's sacrifices in the Mishkan. To try to understand this concept, we can think of an Olympic gold medalist figure skater or a potential gold medalist winner. When I see that figure skater who has the potential to win a gold medal and she lands only a double axel and not a triple, this is a huge mistake that will make headline news. You know, Katarina Witt lands only a double, or she landed on 2 feet instead of one. She loses the gold medal. This is a terrible, terrible infraction for this potential gold medalist. Whereas for me, obviously, if I can only remain standing on the ice for 15 seconds, that would be a huge feat. So with great people, the Navi sort of, you know, creates headlines for the mistakes of our great people and exaggerates it and takes a microscope and accentuates those mistakes. And obviously the idea is that we have to draw lessons from those mistakes. The other preface that I'd like to say is that when we learn the account of David and Bathsheba, we have to keep in mind what David's mindset was when seeing Bathsheba for the first time. His mindset was that he still did not have an heir to the throne, and he was looking to facilitate his successor who was not yet born. And along with that, connected with that successor is facilitating the Zera Shel Mashiach, the Messianic line. Remember, he wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash. Nathan told him he can't, but his successor will build it. David knew his destiny. David knew that his son would build the Beis HaMikdash. He also knew that he was the beginning of, or I shouldn't say the beginning because Rus was really the beginning, but he was bringing about that Messianic line. Therefore, this account has to be looked at from that perspective of David. Additionally, David knows his history and understands that the previous seeds of Mashiach came about via circuitous routes from the most unlikely of places. We have Moab, who is the ancestor of Rus, the great-grandmother of David HaMelech, came about from an incestuous relationship between Lot and his daughters. We have the birth of Peretz, the son of Yehuda and Tamar, the product of a very peculiar encounter where Tamar poses as a zona, as a woman of the night, in order to be with Yehuda. We have Rus and Boaz. Their marriage brings about the birth of David's grandfather, and this was due to Rus presenting herself to Boaz at night. So the seeds of Mashiach come about through very curious encounters, and they are very, very murky beginnings. Now, the question is why Mashiach comes about through such interesting and murky encounters. One idea is that Mashiach represents tikkun, or the ultimate repair and perfection. Mashiach, coming from at times impure roots, demonstrates the ability of man to purify the impure, and from HaKadosh Baruch Hu being able to extract purity from impurity. Another idea is that for a leader to have this proverbial skeleton in his closet brings about humility. And the other idea is that the questionable and seemingly impure roots is a method of warding off the Satan from harming the messianic line. The Satan only wants to harm pure entities and doesn't need to bother with anything impure. So this Mashiach coming from these impure roots sort of is a smokescreen and a decoy, so to speak, to the Satan. For a more detailed discussion of this particular line of thought, the listener is directed to the introduction of the art scroll, Megillas Rus. Okay, yet another point is that it's important to keep in mind that we cannot take this story in Perek Yud Aleph at face value. And here lays a prime example of the interdependence of Torah Sheba'al Peh and Torah Shebiksav, the oral Torah and the written Torah. To learn this Perek, and indeed any other part of the Torah, without the Torah Sheba'al Peh means that we would only be getting a partial picture. The oral law is the key to reveal the code of the deeper meaning of the written Torah, and certainly this account is a prime example. A basic tenet of our faith is that the oral law and the written law both come from Sinai. So anybody that's wearing tefillin, the reason that we know how to put on tefillin is because of the oral law. It's not written specifically in the Torah, and for many other mitzvos as well. So here, this account of David and Bathsheba, we have to look at it through the prism of the oral law and Chazal. And indeed, Chazal do try to understand this account, because the account of David and Bathsheba is counterintuitive. It is contrary to everything that we know about David and Hashem's regard for him. Therefore, Chazal do start from a presumption of innocence because of what we know of David HaMelech. Chazal really have no issues with finding fault with those personalities in Tanakh that need to be called out for something. So Chazal are trying to figure out what is the Navi trying to tell us with regard to David HaMelech, and how does this jive with the fact that he is regarded by Hashem as a great person. We do extract much of our tefillos from David HaMelech's Tehillim. He is the beginning, or the continuation of the messianic line. How does this story jive with that notion? So that's what Chazal are trying to do. Okay, so let's get into the Perek. Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk 1. Vayehi l'tshuvas hashana l'eis tzeis ha-melachim, vayishlach David es Yoav ve'es avadav imo, ve'es kol Yisrael ve'yashchisu es b'nei Amon ve'yatsuru al Rabba, ve'david yoshev b'Yerushalayim. At the turn of the year, as Rashi explains, it was the time when kings would go out to war, when produce was in the field and was plentiful. David sent Yoav to the Ammonite city of Rabba to lay a siege and destroy the city, and David stayed in Yerushalayim. The last perek we had learned of David's ill-fated diplomatic mission to Hanun Melech Ammon, which resulted in Ammon waging war and their subsequent retreat back to their cities. Now David HaMelech wants to retaliate. There is discussion among the commentators that one mistake leads to another. The first mistake, that David sent the peace overtures to begin with to Ammon. The second mistake was that David stays back. V'David Yoshev B'Yerushalayim. He uncharacteristically was not an active participant in this battle, which led to his being on his roof, taking a stroll on his roof, and then seeing Bathsheba, as we will see. So David was on his roof, and he looked down and saw this beautiful woman bathing. The Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that the Satan was disguised as a bird, and it flew near a screen that was concealing Bathsheba from view. David shot an arrow towards this bird. It missed, and it broke through the screen, revealing Bathsheba. This seems to be a result of David asking to be tested. The Gemara tells us that he asked to be tested so that he can be at the same level of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Hashem acquiesced and said, you're going to be tested in the area of arayos, in moral and immoral behavior. This, the Gemara teaches us, is a lesson to us. Never ask to be tested, because David asked to be tested and he failed the test. In any case, David sees her and sends someone to find out who she is. In Pasuk Gimel 3, Vayishlach David Vayidrosh Le'isha, David sent to find out, to seek who she is. There seems to be an urgency on the part of David to find out who she is. And indeed, the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that David and Bathsheba were destined for each other from the time of creation. David, who had Ruach HaKodesh, saw Bathsheba and realized that she was destined for him and calculated that what he was about to do was all supposed to be done, especially considering his family history, as we have discussed. The Navi continues to tell us that he finds out that she is Bathsheba and her husband is Uriah Hachiti, a soldier in David's army, who was away because he was engaged in battle with Ammon. The Gemara in Shabbos tells us, Kol hayotzei l'melchemes beis David, kosev get krisos l'ishto. Every Jewish soldier, before going off to war, would give his wife a Jewish divorce, so that if the soldier did not return and there was no evidence of death, the problem of being an aguna would be avoided. Therefore, Bathsheba was not technically married because she had a get from Uriah. The Navi then continues to tell us that David sent for Bathsheba, had relations with her, and then Bathsheba went home. The Navi then makes a point of telling us in Pasuk Dalet, the fourth Pasuk, end of the middle of the pasuk, Vehi miskadeshes mitum asa. She was pure from her impurity, meaning that she was not anida. The bathing that was described was ostensibly a mikvah. Now, just as an aside, every woman during that time, regardless of marital status, would actually go to the mikvah because it reduced issues relating to going to the mishkan and touching trumos and the like. But in any case, the insertion here about the fact that Vehimis Kadeshus Mitum Asa is almost like the Navi is sort of winking to us. Because the Navi makes it look, number one, on the one hand, as if David took a married woman and was guilty of an adultery. And the Navi's telling us, oh, by the way, don't worry, she wasn't anida. Which really seems kind of ludicrous in a way, because if indeed David actually was guilty of the sin of adultery, her being anida would really be the least of his problems. So the insertion here is to hint to the reader that David was not technically over on the avera of taking an eshes ish. After all, she was miskadeshes mitum asa, meaning that technically he might have been able to take her, and she was completely available technically to him. The Navi tells us that Bathsheba became pregnant, after which she tells David that she is pregnant, and the Navi continues to tell us that David then sends a message to Yoav that he wants Uriah, Bathsheba's husband, to come back home. He returns home, and David asks Uriah how he's doing, how the war effort is going, and then orders him to go home and sends him gifts. Uriah defies the king's orders and does not return home and sleeps at the palace entrance. David then confronts him and wants to know why he's not returning. And Yoav says, the Aron and the Jewish soldiers are at war, and my master Yoav, Adoni Yoav, this is in Pasuk Yud Aleph in the 11th Pasuk, and the soldiers are on the battlefield, and you want me to return to my house and be with my wife? David tries again to get him to return home, giving him food and getting him drunk, but he would not budge. The motivation for sending Uriah home was so that it would cover up this relationship between David and Bathsheba so that people would think that Uriah is the father of this child, thus concealing this relationship. And according to the Malbim, although David felt that his actions were warranted because he knew that Bathsheba was destined for him and destined to bring about his heir, he was worried about the Chil Hashem that would ensue should people find out. David sends Uriah back to the battle, since he sees that Uriah is not going home, so he goes to plan B, and he sends Uriah back to the battle with a letter for Yoav. In that letter, basically, was his own death sentence. David orders Yoav to put Uriah at the front lines in a strategically dangerous situation so that he would die in battle. Now, here Chazal tell us that actually Uriah was considered a morid b'malchus, a rebellious person against the king, in which case he could have been put to death legally, and the reason being because he defied the king's order to return home, and also because he referred to Yoav as my master Adoni Yoav in front of David, which was insubordination to the king. Yoav did as instructed, and he put Uriah in a dangerous position. Uriah was then killed. Yoav sent word to David that the army suffered a defeat, and among the dead was Uriah. Bathsheba heard that Uriah had died. She mourned his death, And David then took Bathsheba for a wife, and she gave birth to a son. The perek ends with Pasuk Chav Zayin 27, Vayera Hadavar Asher Asa David Be'enei Hashem. What David did was considered bad in the eyes of God. Even though David was not technically over on the Isser of taking an Eshes Ish because technically there was a divorce, still, number one, the intent of this divorce was to prevent an Aguna situation, as we have said, and for every soldier intended to remarry his wife when he returned from war. Additionally, there is a debate between Rashi and Tosfos about whether or not this divorce was in effect from the moment the soldier left or whether it was retroactive. Additionally, even though David HaMelech was not technically over the Isser of killing Uriah HaChiti, of murder, because he was technically, he was considered a Morid ben Malchus, still Chazal say that he should have consulted with the Sanhedrin. In general, this entire scenario, the optics were not optimal at all, and it created a Chilul Hashem, which is why the Navi tells us, Vayera HaDavar Asher Asa David Be'enei Hashem. Now, for a more detailed discussion on some of the ideas that we spoke about today, the reader is referred to the link attached to the summary of this perek, which is titled Understanding the Episode of David and Bathsheba, which is part of the Journey Through Nach series on the OU website. Thank you for studying together. Le'iloi Nishmas, Malka Esther Bas Tzvi Yosef.